case, United States against Littledale. Mr. Giglio.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsels. My name is Brad Giglio. I represent the defendant appellant in this matter. We're asking this court to overturn the district court's denial of my client's motion to suppress his statement. Your Honors, through a deliberate and strategic action by law enforcement, Daniel's freedom to attend his history class, his freedom of movement, was permanently taken away. And by permanently, I mean never cured by the law enforcement actions after they seized him from that class. This was a completely police-dominated atmosphere. From the moment they take him out of class through their entire questioning, this is a 20-year-old college student in a history class already in session. His choice that he made that day was to go to this class and attend it. And about 10 minutes into class, in a non-school-related investigation, taking place at school with not just two federal agents, but two police officers from the school, along with the institutional authority of the school through the teacher, demand that Daniel step out of class. And one important fact that I think draws that out is Daniel taking his belongings with him immediately after his teacher tells him, step out of class. You have Officer Spires going to the teacher saying, we need Littledale. You have the teacher sending Daniel out of his class. You have Officer Spires following him out of the class to meet three more armed law enforcement officers effectively surrounding him outside of that class. Now, at no point was that taint of that seizure ever cured. At no point did the law enforcement give him a choice to stay in his class. His teacher didn't give him that choice. And, in fact, the teacher didn't even have a choice. From Officer Spires' own testimony, that when I asked him if the teacher had a choice of whether Daniel could leave.
If the officers were simply investigating a crime, that they could call out a student and talk to him?
They can call him out, however. I'm sorry?
What is different between that case and the one we're sitting on?
Well, they're using their police authority.
Well, that's what they use when they go in investigating a crime. Mm-hmm. They think there's a witness to a crime inside the classroom. They want to talk to him now. They're not accommodating themselves to his classroom schedule. They simply ask him to pop out and have a conversation with him.
And that's,
he does.
And that's a choice that the police made, not Daniel. They chose the time.
I understand, but the question is not whether they made the choice, but whether they can make such a choice. Can they investigate a crime by going to a classroom door, knocking on it, and saying, we're investigating a crime, we'd like to talk to Mr. Jones. And the teacher says, Mr. Jones, they want to talk to you. Is there anything legally wrong with what they're doing there?
No.
Okay. But so when does it become illegal?
Well, if
he got up, he picked up his bags, and he went out. Now, that's only shows intelligence. He didn't leave his property around to have it mauled over. So he walks outside, and he sits down, and he talks to him. And they take him to some place where at least they can converse without people bashing him up. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that is in doing that along with
What's wrong with that at that point?
At that point, there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay. So then they sit down with him, and they talk to him. And he is not a suspect. And they tell him he is not. They tell him he can leave anytime he wants.
They didn't tell him he could leave whatever time he wanted.
They did not. They didn't tell him that he was not under arrest?
They told him he was not under arrest. They never told him he was free to leave. They never told him he could go back to class.
If you're not under arrest, you're free to leave. I suppose a 20-year-old is too dumb to figure that one out. But
that's a different question, Judge Bauer.
He's in college. Let's say, anyhow, he was not, you will agree, at that stage of the game, their primary suspect. They were trying to find out whether he knew something about their primary suspect. And that's a matter of question of fact, which was resolved in their favor in the court below. So my question is, when does it become what they were doing overbearing and illegal?
Well, I think the fact that about 99% of the people who commit this offense are men, and he was one of two men in this house, that it's It's disingenuous to believe that he wasn't a suspect. But
well,
that being said,
looking for the other guys.
I think
you didn't believe him. That's what you were saying.
Well, the police took him out of class, and they bear the consequences of those actions.
They had. We've already established they had a right to do that.
But they don't have a right to use that authority, use that seizure, to then question him without Mirandizing him, without advising him.
He was under arrest, but he was not. They didn't arrest him. They didn't arrest him then.
Someone can be not under arrest, but still in custody. That's the distinction between telling somebody you're not under arrest versus you're free to leave or you're free to go back to class. Just like police can detain somebody for police protection, for their security, they can detain someone when they're executing a search warrant, when they're doing a traffic stop.
Yep.
Those people are not under arrest.
Right. So?
So there's a difference, and they should have told him he was free to leave. They should have told him that
told
he had a choice to go back
arrest.
To class.
I told him he wasn't under arrest. And he did get up and leave, didn't he?
Well, and it's our position that the district court's finding that he was told he was not under arrest outside the classroom was clear error, because it was directly contradictory to Officer Spires' testimony that conversation didn't take place in his presence. Officer Spires testified he was present from the time outside the classroom to the police station, and at no point in his presence was the defendant told he wasn't under arrest. So you have Agent Morris, who said they did say it. You have Agent Flowers, whose memory is pretty unclear throughout his testimony.
Well, one witness said he told him he was not under arrest.
And one witness
and
said that didn't happen outside the classroom. And that
and
was a police officer who was unimpeached.
Well, they told him he wasn't in trouble, right?
The judge believed him.
Apparently enough.
That's a credibility finding, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't based on credibility. There was no language in the memorandum and opinion of Judge Cannelli.
The judge agreed that that's what happened.
Well,
that's a credibility finding, isn't it?
I don't think the judge spoke to the credibility of Officer Spires who directly contradicted him.
Well, if he held that he said it, that's finding is he was credible.
And I don't think that this court has to find clear error in order to find for the appellant.
Well, I don't have to find clear error, but it's just what we're talking about is we have to find that the credibility finding was obviously silly, that no reasonable person could have believed it. And that's where you stop.
But I don't think this court needs to even find that. This court can find that he was told he was not under arrest outside the classroom, and there he was still in custody.
Nice position you can take.
Well, I think the court did commit clear error. However, I don't think it's necessary. I mean, when you look at the line of cases, the police chose to go and take him out of class. They called his mother and asked her to come to the house, but they go to seize him from class. That's a distinct decision, and it's a characteristic of their deliberate and strategic and calculated maneuvers in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Tracy.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Tiffany Tracy, and I represent the United States. The district court correctly denied defendant's motion to suppress because the evidence, when applied to the relevant factors under the law, established that the defendant was not in custody on March 9, 2007, and thus Miranda warnings were not required. The district court was correct because the evidence showed that under the totality of the circumstances, a reasonable person would have believed he was free to leave. And because the court correctly concluded that the defendant was not in custody, there was no need to Mirandize him, and therefore there was no need to consider whether he was subjected.
Mirandize him. Is that kind of like sanferize or galvanize? It raises this picture of a suspect being dipped in a vat of hot, bubbling warnings. Miranda is the name of a person. It doesn't have a past participle. It doesn't. Right, it can't be turned into a verb by adding I-Z-E at the end.
It's complaining about your English, nothing to do with the fact that Mirandizing has been used in police stations for about
Or her Spanish, years. Since it was, after all, Ernesto Miranda.
I agree, Your Honor. He
it's
was
like
not
baptized.
Read his Miranda rights.
He's been baptized.
Right.
Your Honor is correct, and yes, he was not read his Miranda rights. And here, the agents were not required to do so because he was not in custody. There is no dispute here that the district court applied the correct relevant legal standards under the law to determine whether he was in custody. And here, the district court correctly concluded that the factors weighed in favor of a finding that the defendant was not in custody. First, the district court correctly concluded that the defendant was not subject to custodial interrogation because when agents encountered the defendant, they did so in a public place, namely the hallway of the college campus. And, more importantly, he twice consented to speak with the agents. The court specifically credited the agent's testimony that the defendant consented to speak to them when they encountered him in the public hallway, and again when they asked him if it was all right if they speak to him in the campus police station. So here, the defendant did have a choice and was presented with a choice and twice consented to speak to the agents. The district court also found that the defendant, when at the campus police station, that the defendant never expressed objection or reluctance, to answering the agent's question, nor did he ask to leave or to speak to anyone else.
But on the other hand, we agree that nobody told him he had a right to not answer the questions, and that's what Miranda said.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So the issue involved is not whether or not he was given such a warning, or he agreed or he didn't agree, it's whether he was in custody.
Correct.
That's the only issue.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Then why bat on about the other stuff? Who cares whether he nodded his head or turned purple or what?
Here, what the district court found was that it was voluntary, his choice to speak to him, and that coupled...
not in custody.
Correct. And that coupled with all of the other relevant factors, such as that he was told that he was not under arrest, that or that he was told that he could not leave, and that he did not ask to leave or make an attempt to do so, in addition to the fact that he was not subjected to physical force or threatened to use physical force, the fact that, to the contrary, the court actually credited the agent's testimony that they never raised their voices.
They didn't raise their voices, but they're all carrying guns, which are obvious.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But a certain amount of intimidation connected with somebody standing around lugging a gun, and four of them standing around.
That is correct, Your Honor. But in that sense, then, every time a police officer talks to any person on the street and that officer has
absolutely.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So here, Your Honor, I think the point is...
back to the issue of whether he was in custody. It has nothing to do with it.
Right, and here, the totality of the circumstances, I believe, showed, and the district was correct, that he was free to leave, and that a reasonable person under those circumstances would have believed he was free to leave.
If you were taken out of your classroom at college, taken to the campus security office, surrounded by several law enforcement officers, armed law enforcement officers, taken into a room, door closed, and questioned about a very serious criminal allegation. Would you feel that you're free to leave?
Yes. Now, here's the standard.
I could predict that answer, but I just now then it comes down to credibility determination.
Right, and here the standard is, of course, not whether I would, but whether a reasonable person would. And here a reasonable person
you're
would.
You're not reasonable. Reasonable.
I'm going to say that I am.
Okay, all right.
But I think here, under an objective standard, a reasonable person would have felt free to leave based on all of those factors that I just stated. Now, yes, he was walked to a campus police station, but under Mathiasen, they say that not every interview that occurs in a campus police station is one that immediately subjects the person to a custodial interview. Here, under all of these factors, in addition to the fact that if agents had come to me and said, would you like to speak to us, and I consented and said yes, and again consented to speak to them specifically in the campus police station.
My whole education has been neglected. There were never any campus police in any place I went. I feel I've been cheated. I'm wandering through life kind of unprotected.
And here the College DuPage was lucky enough to have one, and the officers did allow these agents to use their space, which in a sense made sense.
Five different universities and colleges I attended, never once did we have campus security.
Everybody was well behaved.
Yeah, had to be. If they were there, they were sneaky. They didn't have any guns. Oh, well.
Your Honors, unless you have any further questions, I'll ask that you affirm the district court's decision to deny the motion to suppress.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Giglio?
They didn't take him to a security office, respectfully. They took him to a police station. This was a police station that when I was there and I asked to go in, and this is in the record, to view the room, they refused me entrance. This is a secure location.
Well, that's security in its finest form.
This is a police station. This is the power of the federal government plus a police department plus a teacher to take this 20-year-old out of his class. And if you look at the line of cases...
20-year-old is being tucked virtually in infancy.
He is.
About half of the people in Vietnam and in at least now they're wearing uniforms, are about 20 years old.
Well, Your Honor brings up his Asperger's, and I do think the objective test allows the officers to take that into consideration.
You
because
were appointed, were you not?
I was, Your Honor.
He did a good job.
I appreciate that. I believe that he was in custody. If you look at each of the cases, no matter which ones you go to, whether it's Sprosty or Slate or Griffin, Lennox, I mean, each of those usually highlight one or two, maybe three points or factors that show that the individual was in custody. We have about eight that span multiple cases. He was taken out of this class, and he was never given a choice otherwise. If you look at this court's decision in Sprosty, even in Mathiasen that counsel points out, Mathiasen, Phillips, all of those cases, the individual was given a choice. And the police even admit, the agents even admit that in their questioning him, it was deliberate, it was calculated, even when they decided to Mirandize him 25 minutes in without even a reason as to why all of a sudden burned.
Seems to be no way to get rid of Mirandize, is there?
Even after they choose to advise him of his Miranda rights 25 minutes in, they don't even give a good reason as to why all of a sudden they're warranted. They were warranted because they should have done it from the beginning and they failed to. I mean, if you have so much police control over this environment, I mean, they took him from a public place to a private place. They took him from a familiar surrounding, away from teachers, away from other students, away from... They isolated him. Isolate was a word that even Agent Morris used in his testimony. It was on purpose. And they intentionally took him from his class right at that moment in time. I'm not sure there's something other than physically grabbing him they could have done to show that he was in custody. I mean, when you focus on the police dominion and control over this environment, it was clear. They exercised it totally. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under